Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Story Night podcast. I'm Jessica Campbell, and stories are my passion. It's my honor to host this podcast where real women share real stories of real hope. Each episode features one woman sharing her personal story with you. Too often, we fall into the traps of comparison and judgment, but what if we took the time to hear each other's real stories? Let's remember that we all have a story, and our stories matter. We're so glad you've joined us on this podcast journey. May you find hope and encouragement in this episode's story. Hi, ladies, and welcome back to the Story Night podcast. If this is your first time finding us, welcome. We're so glad you're here. If you check out episode one, you'll learn all about the vision and history and purpose of Story Night. So we highly recommend that. And for those of you who have been listening for a while, you know that in many of these initial episodes, we're taking some time to get to know the ladies who are part of the Story Night team. And so for this episode, you get to meet my friend Kirsten, who I'm very grateful as part of the Story Night team. And she was a huge help with the one we did just, gosh, a couple months ago. Yeah. But before we tell her story, Kirsten, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Kirsten. I'm a mom of a four-year-old with one on the way, and I'm married to my husband for 7 years now. I'm into art and illustrating and gardening and definitely have a passion for women and helping them find their way in motherhood.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure is part of what drew you to Story Night. But first, I just have to ask, when are you due?
I'm due in August. Sometime in August. I've been given a couple of dates, so we'll see.
Sometime in August. Well, since I last saw you, you definitely have popped out a little bit. You're looking.
So. Yeah, I know. I'm like, definitely look pregnant, which is great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Feeling baby kicking.
And how is your four-year-old responding to this?
Oh, he's so excited. Extremely excited. He'll come up to me and either rub my tummy or kiss me there and talk to the baby. And
remind me, did you already find out the gender or are you waiting?
We're waiting until we deliver. So we'll see. That'll be such a huge surprise.
It'll be so fun. So ladies listening, you will just have to attend all of our live Story Night events to then eventually find out.
Yeah,
boy or girl and meet Kirsten. Okay, so back to just your heart for women. I'm assuming that's a big part of what drew you to Story Night. So can we tell the listeners, you know, what made you decide to be a part of this team?
Yeah, I think I just was drawn in for the vulnerability. Like right off the bat, and just the impact that made for other women to hear other stories that sounded similar to theirs. And I thought, oh my goodness, what I would have given to have had that in my first year or two, or like that journey of motherhood, to have had somebody to relate to or even just acknowledge that this is hard. Or
Absolutely. I think so many women, regardless of the topic, will have that moment where they look back and, oh, I wish I had that tribe of women or that mentor or that friend that could speak to my situation and remind me that you are not alone in this and you're not the only person who's dealt with this trial or had these feelings, you know, whatever that may be, from something, I don't know, maybe really lighthearted to something extremely heavy. I'm excited we get to hear your story because you have, I think, a really important message to a lot of women, particularly moms, of something you went through that I think a lot of women go through and they don't talk about nearly enough.
Yeah.
But let's start at the beginning. Where are you from? And tell us about your childhood.
Yeah. Let's see. A lot of my childhood was spent here in Oregon, but the first like maybe 8 years was in Florida. Around my family, my mom and dad and my siblings. My parents weren't together since I can remember, really. So my mom ended up moving up to Oregon and took us kids with her. So a lot of my childhood was then, the rest of it was spent here in Oregon. My mom was raising us kiddos. There's four of us. And she went to work full time. And on top of that, she went to school full time just to get us to have a future that maybe she didn't have. And just to get us off on the right foot, which means she's out of the house a lot, but she did as much as she could to support us.
And so when you arrived in Oregon, I'm just even thinking of your mom's story, right?
Yeah.
How old were each of the four of you when she's trying to work full time and go to school and raise all four of you at the same time?
I was entering fourth grade and my oldest brother is about 9 years older than me. And then it's my sister, myself, and my younger brother were all a year apart. So if I was in fourth, she was in fifth, and my brother was in third. So all three of us were in elementary school. We were walking ourselves to school, getting ourselves back home, figuring out meals, because she had to work in school to get us to have the house we were in and provide food and all the stuff.
I know a lot of moms will relate to her story in that sense of wanting to be physically, emotionally available for their children 100%, but still having to provide financially. And in order to do that, often you need some schooling or some kind of training, at least for some, whatever whatever path you're going on.
There would be many hats that she wore to support us.
And I imagine with the ages that you were all at, there was a lot of like siblings having to take care of each other.
Oh yeah. My older sister was in charge of us for the most part, and then we just the three of us were just our own little group of, I don't know, we got each other's back and we did things around the house, but it always just kind of, I mean, when you have siblings taking care of siblings, it's not really an ideal situation for anybody because no one's being, corrected or raised in a way that's beneficial to our character. So then we're just kids leading kids, and that's kind of chaotic.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you turned out great.
Thanks. It's all the Lord's doing. It's definitely not mine. I know my mom did the best that she could, and that's, more than I could even ask for. That's all that I ever try to do myself as a parent. I try to do my best and give my best. Well, that being said, I didn't really get a clear picture of what a healthy marriage looked like, or even what raising children full time looked like. And that's something that I'm in right now, married, 7 years in, and trying to raise a child and one on the way, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. So that's all new to me.
Yeah, none of that was
And
part of your experience,
no, not at all.
which does make a really big difference. I think sometimes we like forget that or overlook that or assume that, as kids grow up, they just get things by osmosis.
Yeah,
And
which I mean, they'll pick stuff up eventually, but from where, that's always questionable.
Because so much of their influences in today's day and age is social media and, friends and culture and whatnot. And if you're trying to teach or model anything else, that becomes challenging. Okay, so we're going to fast forward a little bit through your teen years and then to where you find and meet your husband.
We met in 2017. We were volunteering to feed the homeless out in Portland, and he knew from day one that we were going to get married. He's like, "Oh, that's my wife." It took me a week or two to kind of
A
get.
whole week or two. I thought you were going to say years.
No, not at all.
Just
We
a week or
actually
two.
ended up we got married like five months later. So we just knew it. I mean, it just took me a little bit longer than him, but even then, it's not even that long.
A week or
Yeah,
two.
not at all. We both felt like the Lord was telling us, like, this is your person and this is who you're going to be with and start a family with and all that. But yeah, we were married just a couple of years, and then we got pregnant, which was a kind of a surprise for us. We weren't really expecting that. Even though we were trying, it just kind of all of a sudden we're like, we're pregnant and we're going to have a baby and trying to figure out what the future looks like and thinking, oh, we know how to do this. Like, we got this. Like, and we think we're ready,
And
whatever
were
that
you
means.
both working at the time and living locally?
So he was working. I was actually home, working from home, illustrating and doing things like that, illustrating books, illustrating characters for other people, and doing that kind of thing, which was really fun because that was, my joy at the time. My husband was able to support me to do that, which has been really fun to get into.
Yeah, huge blessing.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you find yourself pregnant.
Yeah, our living situation wasn't quite ideal, so we looked anywhere from Vernonia to McMinnville, and we found something in McMinnville and it all kind of worked out. Put an offer down, and next thing we know, we have a home. It was
And it seems like
crazy.
everything's just going beautifully, right? You find the man, you get married, he's got a good job, and now you have a home, a baby on the
Yeah,
way.
took all the things that, like, oh, so these are all the things you got to do, the checklist, right? And then this is also during COVID time when we got our house. We were pregnant, and then we moved in, and 4 months later, we had our baby. That was an interesting experience to have a baby during COVID and
Right. Was he born in 2021? So we weren't like in full lockdown, but still lots of factors to consider. Who can be in the hospital? Who do you let your baby around? There were still lots of, I mean, certainly there was a lot of controversy. You've got probably people within the family or a friend group that have very different opinions about how to
Yeah. And
manage
then who do
COVID,
you,
especially with a newborn.
like there's already so much worry about who's around your newborn when they're like they're fresh out of the womb. And on top of that, there's COVID. That's an added layer.
And everyone was just trying to navigate the same. I mean, my son was born in 2021 also, and so we all kind of were going through that. What, there's already enough judgment and opinions about how to raise an infant, and now we add COVID on top of it.
And then it just feels like you're under a spyglass of like, now what are you gonna do under this pressure? After having him, it was all smooth sailing. Like I loved being a mom. I thought, wow, this is great. Like I can just kind of, I can nurse, I can feed him, I can change him wherever I go. I have everything I need in a backpack, and I'm walking food for him. And it all was really good until 6 months postpartum hit, and all of a sudden, like my child that I carried around like an accessory, which is kind of a sucky way to say it, but it's kind of true. Like I could carry him anywhere I wanted to. Like he was just part of me. All of a sudden, 6 months in, he was rolling around, scooting, moving. He wouldn't just be like, I couldn't just lay him down to like go to the bathroom really quick. It's like, no, I have to like make sure you're okay 24/7, and just in a different way. And it just, my world shook. And I think a lot of that just like fell apart, and motherhood hit me really, really hard at 6 months. Part of it's like identity crisis of like, what am I doing wrong? And all of a sudden, I don't feel fit to do this job anymore, which I've been doing for 6 months. And, he was a baby who slept well and ate well and did everything. Like, he was a happy baby. So it's like, all of a sudden, this came on, and he was still the same. He just moved. And all of a sudden, I couldn't handle it anymore. And then I thought, wow, I can't do this whole mothering thing. I don't know that I even want any more children. And part of me even kind of slightly resented having him just because I felt so thrown off and lost in it all.
It's a very vulnerable statement, but one that I know a lot of women relate with.
And it's not, it's, I think it can be embarrassing to say it because it's like, it's your job. That's my job. I signed up for this. This is what I have. And all of a sudden I have a resentment towards my son, or even just struggling through it, and maybe even experiencing depression through it. And that's not easy to share. People experience a lot of the first few months as the harder time for parenting and for motherhood. And at that point, maybe you can kind of get established or have kind of like worked through some stuff. But like for me, everything was great for 6 months. Everybody asked me, and I thought, oh, this is great. And my answer was always, this is great. He's a great baby. We're doing just fine during this transition. And so not a lot of help was offered to me. So then all of a sudden I'm 6 months into it and needing help. It was hard to transition into asking for help, or even receiving it anymore, because nobody asked me anymore because they thought, oh, well, she's got it. The best way I can put my experience at 6 months postpartum was as if I had been dusting all of my hard things in life, not even just motherhood, all of the hard things under a rug and under furniture and all the things. And all of a sudden, this room that I've been dusting all the things in underneath furniture and rugs was just taken out. The rug was out, furniture was gone, and I'm left with all the dust bunnies. Like all the dirt, all the things, unresolved stuff that I didn't deal with was exposed, and I'm stuck figuring it out and wondering, how do I deal with this? Plus take care of a 6-month-old, plus be a wife, please, like plus be all the things that I am, all the hats that I wear. It's like, how do I?
And still try and just be you.
And like losing myself in it all. And then I think that was the hardest part. And I think that kind of hit me really hard, and ended up kind of getting into like a depression state at that time. Plus, it was winter, so that didn't help with Oregon and the weather and how that always plays out during wintertime. A lot of that dirt, the metaphorical dirt, was just unresolved issues. The way I was brought up as a child, the way I was trained to handle situations that were difficult. Like I said earlier, I was raised by my siblings, so my experience of handling situations was very immature. Like I didn't have a mature adult to show me how to handle situations that were rough or tough, difficult situations. So here I am as an adult with a baby trying to handle situations in a way that an adult would, but I don't know how to do that. So then I'm reacting in a very immature way, but I didn't know any better. I'm doing the best I could. And since then, I've sought counseling. I've sought help from women at church, mostly older women. people who have had kids either further along than I have or just a couple months ahead of me, just to get some wisdom and validation that what I'm going through is natural and normal, and that I'm not alone or crazy going nuts, and that I am doing my best. And it's, yeah, just the validation, I think, is what I was looking for. Because I just didn't know how hard it was going to be.
And that postpartum depression is so real.
Oh, yeah.
And so many women experience it at different points in different ways.
Yeah.
And I know that several hospitals and, birthing centers like at least make a strong attempt to prepare
Yeah.
couples that like this can happen, this
Yeah.
can come. Did any of this like connect at 6 months in, going, oh, this might be what's going on? There might be some hormonal pieces or chemical things or mental parts that's common.
I think it slightly came across my mind, but I think I always thought about it in the first few months of having a child. And since he was so, it was so, such smooth sailing for this first 6 months, I think I kind of just didn't really consider that as an option, like being related to being postpartum depression, until I sought counseling and they, I think, diagnosed it as part postpartum depression.
Getting that diagnosis, was that something that gave you some, I don't know, relief or validation, or did that bring out more fear or anxiety?
I think it brought a little bit of comfort knowing that the label itself means that this is common. If there's a label for it, that means
There's other women that
there's
have,
other people.
yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And so how long did this, season last for you before things started to maybe get a little bit better?
Oh man, this was about a year, maybe a year and a half. The trenches were obviously from 6 months to 12 months for his life, and then I kind of slowly started, getting myself out of the ditch that I felt like I fell into. It looked different than I think I would have expected. Like I mentioned earlier, moved to McMinnville, new town, new experience with life, like having a child, new house, new home. We had joined a church, a new community entirely. So starting from scratch with a new experience was very, I think that also played into the whole depression thing of just not having the community that I had back home, or my mom wasn't there. She's a big help to me. I remember seeking out community and trying to just see what was already in place so that I can kind of just jump in and just ride along. And a lot of times what I felt was that people were already kind of established in what they had going on. And that's fine, like people have their friend groups and they feel comfortable with where they're at. But there was no room for anybody new. So that was very hard to navigate, which didn't help with the depression because I'm already feeling lost and I'm already feeling isolated, already feeling like I'm the only one going through this. And then trying to connect with women who are in the same stage of life as I am and not really willing to have newcomers felt like, oh, well, that's just another thing that's wrong with me, or felt like another thing that's like wrong here. And then eventually, I think through seeking counseling, seeking guidance from older women in the church, seeking God on my own quiet time and what that meant for me, I think eventually resulted in me finding kind of more peace and rest in the role that I'm in, and being more confident with who I am as a mom and an individual, even. And then eventually realizing like not every mom's journey looks the same. I think I used to think motherhood looks a certain way. And so if it's not looking that way, then something's not
Something's
right.
wrong or something's
Yeah.
broken.
And then realizing and getting exposure to different types of moms, realizing, oh, they do life differently than I do. And that's okay. Like they do that so beautifully. And I'm like, it wouldn't really work for my life, but like the way they're handling this is great. And then they see another mom and they do different kinds of like parenting structures and different kinds of things. I'm like, wow, people can do things so differently. We all can get along and it'd be okay. Like we don't all have to do the same thing. And it looks different for everybody because every kid is different.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That is so true. And anybody who has, coached or taught or raised multiple children, and you go, how? And even in the same household.
Yeah.
I remember, before having kids, when I was teaching first grade, I would get one child, and then 2 years later I'd get the sibling, and maybe 2 years
Yeah.
later get another sibling, and you think, These kids are as different as night and day, you know, and you just like, I know you're raised by the same parents and you have the same environment. But
Personality and stuff.
yeah, then oh gosh, you could do a whole episode on that whole nature nurture things that play into to kids and how that all works. Anyway,
But definitely
perfect.
not one shoe fits all, for sure. So it's seeing that in motherhood as well. Like, motherhood does not look the same
Right.
for everybody.
So as you are navigating all of these feelings and emotions and changes and challenges, you mentioned you sought some counseling. What tools did you end up getting, or maybe what discoveries even did you have about, as you mentioned, all of this sort of metaphorical dirt that had been swept under the rug? Because when we go through some challenging things, that can often bring up not only the current challenge, but things from the past.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think I discovered that I don't know how to self-regulate, or I didn't know how to self-regulate when things would happen that were out of my control and I didn't know what to do. I would blow up, and I think a lot of experiences would be in anger. I'd be angry. My experience in life was hearing a lot of yelling. So then yelling would come up. All the things that I experienced as a child would come up. I just had an overall unrealistic view of reality. Things would happen, I'd get dysregulated, and all of a sudden, just things weren't, I just wasn't thinking clearly. Counseling taught me a few things of just trying to regulate myself with movement. So getting out for fresh air, not just getting out and just stepping outside, but walking. Exercise can kind of reset your brain a little bit. Breathing techniques, counting in 4 breaths, holding for 3, and then back out for 6 seconds. Physically, even just taking a step back from the situation, even if I can't leave the space that I'm in, taking a step back and just physically removing myself from that immediate whatever it is that's happening can even check you back into reality
Right.
too.
These are all tools that are very doable. Anybody can, you
Well,
know.
actually, I taught a lot of these things to my own son because I'm just like, I'm not going to let you learn this when you're 30 years old. You will learn this when you are 3 or 4. So he's gotten a lot of these tools down, and I advocate for that for him because I don't even know how I made it through 30 years without having any of that. And just what a great tool it is for anybody to have.
Huge.
And so for a child to learn that and just be set already so far ahead of me at 4 is just all I could ask for.
And it's so precious that he gets to watch you model it. And I think it is important for kids to see you want them to have, you know, adult role models that sort of already have these things developed, but
Correct.
we're none of us are perfect and we'll never do it perfectly. And so for them even to see, oh, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa like did make a mistake or they got dysregulated and they can acknowledge that, and now I'm watching them take steps to self-regulate. And so when I, as a 3 or 4 year old, have my neural hijacking and all logic goes out the door and I'm having a tantrum, oh, I have seen that I can come out of this.
It's been really hard at first to let him, I guess, just to even know that he has seen that side of me. It's heartbreaking. I don't want him to have that experience, like, not at all. But what was most important was the repair that I was making afterwards, the efforts I made to re-regulate and to repair my relationship with him or my relationship with my husband. And for him to see that and experience that is huge. And it took a lot of time for me to get to the point of feeling like it's okay and give myself grace and just understand that, like, God's gonna work really good things in his life for this, and he's gonna have just a totally different experience than I did as a kid. And he's getting to have that example, and it just sets him up for life. He's even come up to me and said, "Mommy, being a parent is really hard, huh?" And it's like, I'm so like, it's just the
Sweetheart.
awareness that he has for that. I mean, it only comes from the fact that he experienced all of that, right? And there's been times too where he's, in order to regulate himself, he said, "Mommy, being a 3-year-old is hard. Being a 4-year-old is hard. Being a kid is hard." So it's been really neat to see him just have the capacity for that and understand that and even have words to describe where he's at.
I don't remember if it was from a book or a podcast or something, but some expert in the field of early childhood development had said one of the most empowering, compassionate sentences you can give your kid is to say, "It's hard to be a kid." And just that simple sentence And they do. I mean, when you say that to a kid, they look at you like, yes,
Thank
like you get
you.
it. It is hard to be a kid, and which is sometimes hard to say when you're like, you're having a tantrum because the muffin was cut in half.
Right.
But you know, like, okay, yes. And they're like, yes, life, I'm having a hard day. Life is really,
But
really
what a difference it
hard.
makes to be recognized and acknowledged.
For every topic,
Yeah. No matter how
everything.
old you are. Yeah.
From the 3-year-old who wanted that shoe instead of the other shoe, to the adult who, you know, just found out she had cancer or something. You know, I mean, every part of life that causes us pain or suffering or anxiety or depression or anything, to just have that validation, that acknowledgement that, yes, this is hard. And you're seen and recognized. And now you've got another one on the way.
I do. I'm a little bit nervous, just considering the last 4 years of my son's life with me, and where we're at now is I feel great. I think we've established a relationship with other people. We've got a community that I feel like I've kind of cultivated and built, and that took a lot of letting go of what people might think of me and being confident in who God made me and my role as a mom. But I feel like, I don't know, part of me is a little bit nervous to think like, what if things resurface again? What if these things come back again? And I know I'm not the same. I'm definitely not the same as I was 4 years ago, which is, it's so interesting how motherhood changes you. There's this, just a slight fear or slight, just a little bit of worry.
Like, will this happen again?
Yeah. So I'm praying that I'll handle it well. And I'm trying to be proactive about it. I've written down, I'm a list person, so I've made a list of people I can call, and I've even gone so far as detailing who can I call to babysit, who can I call when I need to break down and just help me with prayer and just pray over me and care for me and over the phone. Who can I call to come over to do my laundry, or like, you know, this, who can I come over to help me with house chores? I wouldn't be embarrassed about coming to my house and seeing all the chaos that everyone else has too, but usually that's behind closed doors. So I just made a, I've done that for myself to be proactive, and I've have it on my fridge. I've got a list of even activities for my kiddo to do so that if somebody wants to come over to help babysit, then they can look at that, or I can look at that when I'm feeling lost and I need to get out of my house and I don't feel like I have the capacity to even think of what to do outside of my house. I have that to go to. So I'm building some support systems for myself for that season that's coming up because I don't know what to expect.
And I think you've got a lot of tools now
Yeah. Oh,
in your.
absolutely. Tools that I didn't have. I have experience that I never had. I have people in my community that I never had.
What words of encouragement would you give to women listening? And it doesn't have to be specifically to motherhood. So if anybody's listening and maybe they're far out of the stages of having little ones, or they don't have kids yet, or maybe they never will, some of the things you've learned still apply.
Right.
It's not only for raising children.
Yeah.
So what words of encouragement would you have for women?
Yeah. I think one thing I would say is that everyone has a different way of handling different things. Everyone's tolerance is at a different level. Just because you dysregulated sooner than others doesn't make you less of a person. It didn't make me less fit to be a mom. What's important is that you recognize that when you get dysregulated, you just adjust your expectations. Seek help from a counselor and, you know, help build up your tolerance through counseling and seeking wisdom from other women. For motherhood, everyone starts different. Everyone enters motherhood differently at different stages of their lives. So I would say be kind to yourself, do your best, and always be willing to learn, always be willing to pivot. That's all your child could ever ask of you. Also, that you're not alone in your struggle of motherhood, that every mom has been there. And I would encourage you to find women who are willing to talk about it. Not just to vent, but to build you up in your journey and in your relationship with the Lord. My last little tidbit of encouragement would be, as you're finding community, if you feel alone, that it takes more than a day. It took me about 3.5 years to 4 years to really get people that I felt comfortable with, my son, my family, people that I could do life with. It took me 3.5 years to 4 years to get that. So don't feel like it happens overnight. It happens in a week, and maybe it does for some people you do click with like that. That's not always going to happen.
You mentioned that you made a list of all these different women that you could call for different needs. And it just made me think how many people might be listening who wonder who they would put on that list. Even if you're not in a season of high need right now, but just imagining if you were. if life threw you a horrible curveball tomorrow, or there was a huge challenge or trial or even trauma that entered your life in the coming weeks, who would those women be? And they don't, I mean, women and men, who are the people that can come around and support you? And if you feel like you don't have names for that list, then I think our whole story night team would encourage you to reach out and find that community. There are people who would love to be a name on somebody's list. And there are so many people who would love to have names on a list. And that's one of the great joys of Story Night, is trying to bring those two types of people together and connect them and build those relationships. And that is one of the goals of our live events. So, ladies, if you are within driving distance of McMinnville, Oregon, we would love to have you in person at our Story Night events. We would love to meet you. We would love to hug you. We would love to connect you with other women. And introvert or extrovert, we want to help you find those names that you could put on your lists. Now, we have our next live event coming up on Thursday, May 15th. This will be at the Grand Ballroom, downtown McMinnville. We're expecting about 200 women or so to fill up that room, gather around round tables, and have some food and hear an inspirational story from Bethany Palacios. Her life began as an orphan in Liberia, but then she was adopted and spent most of her life here in McMinnville. She is now Miss Black Oregon, and you don't want to miss her story. Her sister's going to be singing, and it should just be a really beautiful night of encouragement and relationships. If you happen to be listening to this podcast episode long after May 15th, 2025, you can still go to storynighthope.com to find out when our next live event will be and who the speaker will be for that one. For all of our events, you do need a ticket. They're free, but you do need a ticket. And so you can get that at storynighthope.com. So we hope you can join us. We would love to have you there. You can meet Kirsten and me and the rest of the Story Night team. We want to thank Representative Elmer for providing the platform for this Story Night podcast and these Story Night events so that we get to keep bringing you stories from real women of real hope. We hope you enjoyed this story and were blessed and encouraged, and that you come back next time for our next story. Until then, remember, you have a story, and your story matters, and you are not alone.